Support for WPR comes from Tomorrow River Community Virtual School, delivering Waldorf-inspired live virtual lessons to grades 4K through 8th, open to all Wisconsin students. More is at trcvs.org.
Well, when you think about Door County, you usually don't think about murder. At least I don't think so, unless perhaps you're a fan of the Dave Kubiak mystery series. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network, and great to have back with us the author of that mystery series, Patricia Skalka. And we'll be talking about the latest in the series, Death in Cold Water. Patricia is a former writer for Reader's Digest. She presents writing workshops throughout Wisconsin. So it's great to have her back. And I hope you'll participate. What do you think about Dave Kubiak? Have you read that series? Detective fiction? Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can send us an email at talk@wpr.org, or you can leave a question or comment on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And Patricia, great to have you back. Thanks for joining us.
Well, it's my pleasure, Larry.
Well, for those who have not read the other books in this series, tell us a little bit about Dave Kubiak.
Dave Kubiak is a former homicide detective with the Chicago Police Department who has had a very tragic episode in his life. His wife and his daughter are killed in an accident that he thinks he could have prevented. So the man is burdened not just with grief, but with guilt. Drinks himself out of his job. He's sort of just lost. And his former partner steers him to Door County. He retrains as a ranger. He comes up here to lose himself. He comes up here to forget his past, to get away from death, to get away from any sense of responsibility he has to the rest of humanity. And then it all kind of turns around on him, because in the first book, people start dying under odd circumstances. Everybody's trying to look the other way. But Kubiak, he's the one who knows something's going on. He's got a sense of what it is. He has to face his own demons, his own sense of responsibility, and re-embrace it to kind of get back in the groove, to get his moral compass back on track, in other words. And then, of course, he solves the crime. At the end of the book, he's elected sheriff, so he then proceeds in the second book, which occurs in Kubiak time 2 years later. I leave a span of about 2 to 3 years between the books because I want him to move through time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be interesting, and there's a reason for this, because he starts in a place of such great pain. I just felt I can't leave him there.
No.
And so I want him to grow, to change, to face new circumstances in life, and like the rest of us, to age and to have different things happening in his life, and as well as to those people that he becomes friends with and becomes colleagues with. So everything is changing for people, and I perceive this as kind of a 20-year time span for Kubiak.
Well, and in the latest book, Death in Cold Water, he's on to another. Well, he's got a kidnapping, and finding some bones. So, on the beach,
there are two lines of inquiry, two mysteries, two puzzles that he has to resolve, and are they related? Are they not related? And you know, the FBI comes in on the kidnapping, which is sort of an odd kind of. At first, it looks just like a disappearance. They're not even sure it's a kidnapping. The FBI comes in, and they're committed to working with local law enforcement, but there's personality clashes, and Kubiak kind of keeps getting shoved a little bit further and further to the side, to the periphery. The discovery of these bones, and they're old. The bones are obviously very old. They're eroded and damaged, and so there's no way they're linked to the disappearance of this man, the crime that's going on right now. And he becomes just sort of determined to solve that case. And so he's working one angle, but he's also still working on the kidnapping case, and he's never been involved, had to solve a kidnapping case before. So he's going. There's a clash between the two approaches. Kubiak is moving on instinct and on the very subtle little clues that he's picking up around him. The FBI is very heavily into data collection. You know, they've got their tapping phone lines. They've got tons of records of various people in the state that they think could be involved for one reason or another. So you have these two very different approaches to crime solving.
And it's a great book. I really enjoyed reading it, although it's kind of, in some ways, sad. But it's a wonderful read. What was it about Door County that made you think about murder?
You know, that's a great question, Larry. And it's actually, I'm sitting here right now looking out at this magnificent scene of huge waves rolling in on a sandy beach. I have an old family cottage on the Lake Michigan side. And it's a stunningly beautiful setting. And it was that kind of setting that I was looking at the one day many years ago on a warm summer day, thinking of how gorgeous it was, and then sitting in the same place at night when it was incredibly dark because there was no moonlight, no starlight, and I had this notion of you know, light, day and night, light and dark, good and evil, the contrast, and that gave me the idea of taking a place with this beautiful surface, this veneer, like a travel brochure veneer, with sinister forces at work beneath the surface. And that gave rise to the first book, and which eventually gave rise to the whole series. So it all came right from the setting of Door County.
That's wonderful. Well, you know, you teach writing workshops across the country, so you obviously have written across a variety of genres. What inspired you to write mystery books, though? Is that it? The dark and light? And
well, I think part of it is that I've always liked, you know, as a kid growing up, I read Nancy Drew, I read Sherlock Holmes. I liked being challenged and having to solve a puzzle. And that always kind of stayed with me. But it was in reading Dorothy Sayers, one of her books especially, The Busman's Holiday, that made me realize that a really good mystery goes so far beyond solving a crime. You know, like it's not just the answer to whodunit. It really provides a portal for seeing into human character. And that's what fascinates me. Those are the kinds of mysteries I like to read, and that's the kind of mystery I decided I wanted to write. And so character, my stories are all really character-driven. The plots are obviously very important. You have to have an interesting story, but it's the people that really pull you in.
And those characters, do they kind of develop? How do you develop your characters over time as you're writing? Do they change? You have a good idea before you start?
I like to, you know, there are people who find kind of write by the seat of their pants. They're actually called pantsers. And then there are those of us who plot things out. So I'm what's called a plotter. And I like to have it all firmly in mind. I mean, I work out the storyline in great detail before I start writing because I want to know what the story is so then I don't have to worry about it as I'm writing. I know where I'm going. And similarly, I really want to know my characters. I develop really detailed profiles and spend a lot of time thinking. You know, people have a notion of a writer at work when he or she is sitting with a pen in hand or sitting in front of your computer. But actually, so much of the work goes on when you're at the grocery store or walking or driving because you're thinking. You're constantly thinking about the story and the characters and creating these, developing them in your head. And so that's kind of the approach I take. I mean, I knew Dave inside out before I started writing the first book and the other main characters as well. I feel that's one of the reasons, you know, there's always those moments of doubt, you know, is this any good? Should I go on with it? And I felt like I knew my characters so well I would recognize them walking down the street. And I thought, you know, I've got an obligation to them. They've got this story, and I'm the only one who knows it, and I have to tell it. So that's kind of where my motivation comes from.
Yeah. Jack Mitchell, who was the station manager here, when I first started doing a call-in talk show, he said, well, you know, you're going to be working 24 hours a day. And I said, what? And he said, well, wherever you are, you're going to have it, and whoever you meet and talk to, you're going to have it in the back of your head. Well, would this be a good show, or is that a great topic? And I think the same holds true for you when it comes to writing and other authors.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're never off. You're always just the wheels are spinning, and you're taking notes. And the fourth book, I'm working on the fourth book now, and one of the ideas that really is central to the book comes from something someone told me years back. that I kind of filed away in the back of my head thinking, wow, that's really cool. I have no idea what I'm going to ever going to do with it, but I would like to use that someday.
Why did you choose to have a man as your protagonist?
Oh, that's a good question. And I get, you know, people say that to me, why not a woman? When I was developing the idea for the first book, I needed, because of the nature of the story, that it went back in time and everything that was happening in the present depended on things that had happened decades before. So I needed an outsider, someone who didn't know the people, didn't know the old stories, the misdeeds and the needs, you know, the grudges. And somehow Kubiak, he just came along with the story. He was the logical person. I knew Chicago cops. I'm from Chicago originally, so all of these things kind of came into play. And when I actually sat down to write it, I thought, wow, should I stick with him or should I have a woman as the protagonist? And if you talk to other writers, most of them would say this, that you go with what fits the story. So you don't kind of like try to cram in a certain kind of character. Kubiak just grew up with the story, and I had to be... You know, I had to be honest with the story, and he's the one that fit. Now, I've worked on other things, and I have other ideas in mind that have women as the protagonists, because they fit. It works with the story.
And of course, in the book, there's a mysterious, in a way, to me, girlfriend, I guess you could say, Kate. So she plays a role in the book and in the past book as well.
Yes, and she plays actually a fairly large role in Death in Cold Water.
Yeah.
She's a professional photographer, and Kubiak relies on her to help document certain things that are happening in his investigation. So she's there in a professional capacity and then also in a personal capacity. But part of the book is also his relationship with her,
yes.
Or is it going to develop, and what is it going to develop into? And it's interesting because readers kind of vote. You know, they either like Kate or no, Kate, yes, Kate, no, Kate. And I get these responses from people. But you asked about, going back to asking about Kubiak, I did a reading in September in Sturgeon Bay for an organization that was a benefit for a literacy group. And there was a man in the audience, and afterwards he said, you know, people ask me, what's Dave like? What is Kubiak like? And I tell them that Kubiak is a man who does the right thing. And I was just struck by that. That was so spot on. That is really who Kubiak is. He's the sheriff. He's willing to, you know, nudge the rules aside a little bit if he thinks it's the right thing to do. He's always trying to help someone or make an accommodation if necessary. He's just that kind of guy. He's got the quintessential heart of gold, even though you may not see that at first at all. And I've had readers say to me, you know, when they started the first book, he wasn't very likable. And
yeah.
I say, well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But people do come around, and Dave's kind of got a little bit of a fan club now. It's kind of fascinating to me.
Patricia Skalka, our guest today, she is the author of the, so far, three volumes on Dave Kubiak, the mystery series. It's the latest is Death in Cold Water. Give you a chance to join in now. If you have a question or comment for her, are you a fan of Patricia's? Do you like Dave Kubiak? What about writing? I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us. The email address is talk@wpr.org. Or go ahead and post on our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network. Today at 11:45, we'll look at the words of one of the founders of the local arts movement in America, Robert E. Gard, Bob Gard. His daughter, Mario, will be with us to talk about a new arts initiative. It's called the New Community Vision, so I hope you can stay with us for that. In the meantime, talking now with Patricia Skalka about writing and about her latest book in the Dave Kubiak mystery series, this one titled Death in Cold Water. It's a great read. I hope you have questions, join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. You know, when Patricia, when I thought about the name, Dave Kubiak, I thought, what a perfect name. Do names matter a lot when you're coming up with a character?
Absolutely. The name has to fit the character, but you also want a name that's kind of interesting, that isn't just too ordinary, as it were, something that the reader can relate to, easy enough to pronounce, but slightly different so that they'll remember it. So I spend a lot of time coming up with names and just thinking about them, and you don't want too many names in a book that are too similar, because then it's confusing. You know, I know if I read a book where there are too many people, you know, there's a Tom and a Tim, and you know, and yeah. I'm kind of going back and forth with who's who, and so you do want to you look for a real balance and kind of just a real spread.
I was interested. What the coroner's name is Evelyn.
Yes.
And I thought, I wonder where she got that.
Evelyn Waugh.
Evelyn Waugh, of course.
Yes, that's where it came from. And people will often ask about that, and then, oh, yeah, right. And it used to be a trick of writers was, you know, you'd pick up a phone book and you kind of like run your finger down and you look for interesting names. Well, it's hard to find phone books anymore. But what I do is collect programs. From, like, if I go to a music performance, an orchestra, or a play, and I always gather up the program and bring it home with me, and then I look through the list of the people who are involved in the production or the people who are sponsors or donors, and you never pull a name out in its entirety, but I'll look for, like, first names that are, like, kind of interesting or intriguing, a little bit different, and then I'll look at last names and kind of match them up and pair them up. And it's a good way to come up with names that are maybe just a little bit out of the ordinary, or that maybe you just don't even think of. So you know, there's different ways of doing it, and people are always looking for interesting names. Or sometimes it's a street sign, you know, like you'll see a name on a street sign, and you think, wow, that would be a great character.
Yeah, I've interviewed somebody once who said he liked to use his friends' names in the book, in his books, and I suppose he maybe picked his friends' names with some thought about what the character sounded like, but he thought it was always great fun to have the murderer be the name of one of his friends.
You know, I've thought of doing that, and then I think, oh, what if you have a falling out with that person, and they get really annoyed with it. So I don't go that route, but I know that there are authors who do that. I think what's interesting about the Kubiak series is that it's, you know, it's set here in Door County. It's set in a place that many, many people are familiar with, and people find comfort in that, or in some enjoyment. It brings back good memories of a place they've been. But the stories really deal with universal themes. In the first one, Death Stalks Door County, you have greed, revenge, and lost love. Well, that's, yeah. You know, that can happen anywhere. And the second one, it was treachery and deceit and how people react when they realize they've been misled, seriously misled for decades. And the third one is really, the core of it is a story of arrogance and abuse of power, yeah. And how that comes back to haunt, you know, again, decades later. So I that's what I look for. I look for the familiar in both in the setting, but also the familiar in terms of human behavior.
Was this book inspired by any real events?
No.
No?
None of them were. The first book was really inspired by the setting. The second book was inspired by my wish to do something that involved veterans from World War II and using the Coast Guard contingent from Sturgeon Bay, working up in the Aleutian Islands during the war. The third book came really from wanting to do a story about, it was plot-driven. Yeah, I wanted to do a story about a kidnapping that was linked to other events.
And you had this book, if I'm not mistaken, I'm trying to think, it spanned a week, I believe. Is it Is that more difficult to write when you've got something just spanning a week's time?
I don't think so. I mean, the first two books each covered a two-week period. And I realized that when you're dealing with a disappearance slash kidnapping, it has to be condensed, and you can't drag on for that long. It has to be resolved much more quickly. And just the way the characters fit the story, that the time frame has to fit the nature of the story. There might be, I mean, maybe there'll be one in the future that will extend over a period of a month. Maybe one would have to be resolved in a few days. I don't know. It really depends on the story.
You know, one of my favorite writers, and I like him because of the dialogue that he uses, is John Sanford. I don't know if you've ever read any of his mystery series, detective series set in Minnesota primarily. But your dialogue is also wonderful. It sounds so natural and smart in many ways. Do you read it out loud when it's to get it to sound right, or how do you do it?
I do. I read it out loud, and I work very hard at being true to the characters and the way they would talk. And there has been more than one occasion where I've written a passage of dialogue that I thought is just absolutely perfect. Wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and the thing that pops into my head is, they'd never say that. They'd never talk like that. Throw it out and start all over again. And that's how I think you just get closer and closer to it. And I also have a friend who reads the manuscript to me out loud when the first draft is finished. And that is just invaluable, because when you're reading it yourself, even if you're reading it out loud, you tend to hear what you want to hear. You know, your mind plays this little game with you. But when someone else is reading it to you, the flaws jump out. I mean, they are like huge. They it's like, oh, did I actually say that? And then, you know, so I take copious notes and correct things and change things, or you hear repetition. But that's when you really know whether it's working or not.
So you say, stop reading for a minute here while I write this down.
What page is that? You know? Yes, I do, and then go back and correct it.
Oh man, well, you conduct workshops around the country. I teach at the university, and I teach to some extent writing. I teach writing for broadcast and social media style. How difficult is it for you to teach people to write?
I think what I try to do is they're usually workshops, so they're not like a long course over a period of time. So each workshop will focus on a specific aspect of writing. For example, creating dialogue that works. And talking, you know, give them examples of what doesn't work and what works, and then discussion of why. One might be on character development. How do you do this? How do you create a realistic character that people can relate to? Or it might be specifically on how to develop the storyline so it's cohesive and makes sense, and that you can get a complete story. People often have a great idea, but they don't know how to expand that. I mean, there's a huge difference between an idea and a completed manuscript, like, you know, maybe 75,000 words difference. And it's hard to get from one to the other. But there are ways that you can work at it and techniques you can follow. So a workshop is, as I said, is just focused on one aspect of it. And what you can do is just give people the tools, or how to improve your writing. Things people, and I believe me, I count myself among them, tend to, at least in an initial draft, maybe overuse adverbs. You rely too heavily on them. And I gave a workshop once where I really specifically talked about this and gave examples. And I said, you know, when you go home, take something you've written, and just as an experiment, cross out every adverb, and then go back and read it and see, is it stronger without it? You know, which do you prefer? Which one is stronger? And, you know, that doesn't mean you can't put some of them back in, but maybe you didn't need them all. And I got an email from a man who'd been in the workshop, you know, about a week later. And he said he was really skeptical when I had said this in the course of the workshop, he said, but I went home and I did it. And he said, you were right. It was much better when I took them out.
Interesting. In your experience, in your own experience, and then maybe those other people that you talk to who have written a book or who are writing a book and need some help, what's their biggest misconception about writing a book?
Wow, that is a great question. The biggest misconception, I think, and it's probably, again, one that I shared, I think you tend to be intimidated and feel like it has to be all there, perfect, that you have to simply be able to present it almost in its entirety, sit down and write this marvelous creation. And it doesn't really work that way. You're allowed to write a first draft that is kind of weak and wobbly, and then you edit it and revise it, and you keep honing it and honing it and honing it. And I remember, and you know, I was a nonfiction writer for my whole professional career. Now, I used to do this all the time, but somehow when I looked at fiction, it was like this golden thing up on a high mountain, and I kept thinking, wow, you know, can I do that? Can I produce this like whole wonderful book? And not realizing that I was allowed to make mistakes and then correct them and edit and revise. And I think that's what people get intimidated by. And it was actually a weird experience I had at a Picasso museum that had a room of all of his rough drafts and models for that famous sculpture that's in downtown Chicago. And I thought, wow, this guy is like, you know, one of the most famous artists in the world, and he had to work at it. It didn't just spring whole from his mind. He had different versions of it, and I thought, and that gave me the confidence then to really write a novel, because I knew that I could work at it. I could change it and shape it and keep revising it. The trick is that you do all this work like behind the scenes. It's like getting ready for a play, you know, think of all the rehearsals and the changes and the scenes and everything that have to be pulled together. But when it's presented to the audience, it's like cut from one fabric. You know, it's just all of a piece. It looks perfect, or, you know, wonderful anyway, if not perfect. And it's the same thing with writing a book. You do all of this behind-the-scenes hard work, but when the reader gets it, it's seamless, and it looks like you just sat down, and there it was.
And there it was, yeah, for sure. Donna on Facebook says she loved the first two books, and she had no idea the other one was out, so she's going to order it right away.
Wonderful.
She loves Dave Kubiak, was introduced to the series one day in Door County when she was camping at Peninsula State Park. I love to go there. A small independent bookshop in Egg Harbor recommended the first book, and it was so well written that she got the next one, and will be ordering the next one quite soon. So she says, please keep writing.
Well, thank you, Donna. I will.
And in fact, you have some ideas in mind for the series is continuing. Of course, you have another book you're working on. How long will this run, do you think?
At this point in time, I'm thinking 6, possibly 7 books. And as I said, there's a 20-year story arc to them as I envision them now. So Kubiak started at age 40. He was 42 in the first book, 44 in the second. He's 46 in the third. I'm thinking by the time I get to book 6 or 7, he'll be in his early 60s and maybe ready to retire.
But one last case.
Well, there's always one last case, isn't there?
Oh, man. Well, I think it's the case. The characters then kind of go in a little bit different directions. Do they ever go in directions that you had not planned?
Yes. In fact, in the second book, there's I introduce a young deputy named Mike Rao. And I introduced him just for expediency's sake, because Kubiak needed to have access to a speedboat. And I thought, oh, here's this, you know, hotshot young deputy, and of course he and his buddies own the speedboat, and he'll loan it to Kubiak, and or you know, Kubiak will be able to ask him to use it to do an errand or something that's related to the story. And Mike plays kind of a minor role, and that was what I had anticipated for him. And in the third book, Death in Cold Water, quite a different role. And that kind of surprised me, but it fit naturally with the story, but it also fit really naturally with the development of Kubiak and his place in the world, because he comes from, he had a lousy childhood and he had not a very good role model as a father. And so he has this relationship with the coroner, Evelyn Bassard, who becomes almost a father figure to him. And just almost naturally, inadvertently, I found Kubiak becoming almost like a father figure to Mike Rowe.
Yeah, and I suspect he's going to be playing a role as you go along in your future books.
It just I didn't anticipate that at all. And in fact, there's a line in the third book. There's a very kind of critical, emotional scene takes place, and Kubiak actually addresses him as son, like, "Are you okay, son?" And it's naturally the way an older man might speak to a younger man, but it also can be interpreted in a very different way, you know, almost as a father to son kind of piece of dialogue or conversation. And I just wrote it, and then I looked at it and I thought, wow, that really says more than I even realized it was going to say. Sometimes these things happen.
Thinking back to Diana's Facebook comment, she mentions the local bookstore. How important are bookstores like that, or bookstores in general, important to the sale of your books and say versus online sales?
Well, I think independent bookstores are.
Aren't they great?
Oh, they are marvelous, and they are so—they're just invaluable. Not to all writers, because they're a way of reaching directly to readers. They provide almost like a community center. People come there. They have readings. They have events. They get to meet authors. Local booksellers provide a real public service to the community, and they really, really deserve our support. And they need it, because they're online sales are important, and they're very valuable and helpful, but there is nothing like that personal connection. And if you have a bookseller who is familiar with your work, they literally hand sell it. You know, someone will come in and say, I'm looking for a good cookbook, or I'm looking for a good travel book, or I'm looking for a good mystery. And if they've got something they like, they'll say, "Here, try this." So it's really just a wonderful, and they're great people. They're very knowledgeable and helpful. I just love them.
What are some who are some of your favorite writers, and why do you like their books?
Well, in terms of mysteries, I like Kate Atkinson, and I think I like her books because they're complicated, and she has a kind of a flawed, brooding protagonist. I guess I'm drawn to that kind of character. I also like Louise Penny. Her books are just marvelous. You know, they're set in a fictional area of Canada, and she's got her Inspector Garmash is just a real likable character. The stories are complicated. I also like Martin Cruz Smith, who's been writing for years. His Gorky Park was one of his first mysteries that I read, and it just fascinated me. And he created a character who's then gone on in a series of books. I was just at a conference called Magna Cum Murder in Indianapolis, and oh my gosh, there were so many wonderful writers there. It was a pleasure to just kind of be surrounded by them. And one of them was Maureen Jennings, and she's a Canadian writer who developed the William Murdoch mysteries, which have gone on to be a very popular TV show. Just a delightful person with great insight into human character. So mysteries, like all books, It's like there's something for everybody. Donna Tartt is a marvelous writer, and she writes really huge 700-page literary works, but they're actually mysteries at heart. Goldfinch, The Secret History, are two of her three books, which are just stunning. So something for everybody out there.
Yeah, there sure is. And you have some readings coming up, and I wanted to highlight those for people because, let's see, November 5th, you're at the Southwest Wisconsin Festival of Books at UW Waukesha. That should be fun.
Right. I'm on a panel there. I'm discussing mystery books. And then Tuesday, November 15th, I will be in Green Lake, Wisconsin at the Case Decker Public Library at 6:30 doing a reading and a discussion. Wednesday, November 16th, I will be at Boswell Books in Milwaukee with the wonderful Kathleen Ernst, and that's at 7 p.m. And I just, this was kind of a surprise, November 3rd, this week, this Thursday, the organization Right on Door County has a Great Lakes Great Books Club where they discuss the book of the month or the book of choice for that period. And their first book this year is My Death in Cold Water. So they're going to be talking about it Thursday morning at the Maritime Museum in Sturgeon Bay, and I'm going to pop in at 11:30 to chat with people about it. So I'm looking forward to all of these events.
That should be a lot of fun. Boy, I expect sometimes they're not great fun, but most of the time I would think it'd be fun to talk to readers.
It's always great fun, because people have insights and they have opinions that are valuable and they make observations that are really helpful, and it's also nice because writing is a very solitary existence.
Yeah.
You know, it's me, the computer, and the cat. And you tend to kind of get lost in that little world that you live in. People think you're crazy. You're walking around having conversations with your characters, you know. And then you have to get out into the real world again. And so the social aspect of it is really just critically important.
And this has been such a delight talking with you, Patricia. And your latest, of course, Death in Cold Water, and you've got another one on the way.
That's correct.
It's set in the same location, same time, same station kind of thing?
Kind of thing, yes. And you know, I try to move them around the county, the peninsula here. So I will say that, like, the third one, Death in Cold Water, really moves between Ellison Bay and Bailey's Harbor. The one that I'm working on now, the fourth one, will be more Washington Island, Sister Bay, and those are places that haven't been too, too prominent in the previous ones. And they're all over the place, and really, I mean, and what a marvelous Door County has, something for everybody here, and just a variety of settings, and the history here is so rich, it's just perfect.
And you do take me there when I'm reading, and your descriptions, I can see them in my mind. I love the place, and love talking with you, Patricia. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It was a real treat for me.
Well, Larry, it was quite a pleasure, and thank you for having me. I enjoyed it very much.
Patricia Skalka is the author of three Dave Kubiak Door County mystery books, former writer for Reader's Digest, presents writing workshops throughout the United States. And we have some links on our Facebook page, too, at the Larry Mueller Show, to her site. And so I hope you will take a look at those books. She's another author writing about Wisconsin. And coming up, we're going to be talking with another author. This year marks the 50th anniversary of the book The Arts in the Small Community, Professor Bob Gard's pioneering writings about his work with five small Wisconsin communities, and we'll be talking with his daughter, Mario Gard Ewell, next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.